Welcome everyone to the first Future Melbourne Committee meeting in 2020 on the 4th of February, and we're opening the meeting at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance. Welcome to the City of Melbourne this evening. We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we gather, the Boonwurrung and the Woiwurrung Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and pay our respects to their elders past and present. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. Today we are really pleased that Melbourne is still a significant meeting place for people of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander backgrounds. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that this meeting is being streamed live. It goes through our City of Melbourne website. Hopefully the start of the year kicks up our audience numbers, and feel free always to have a look. And an audio and a video recording of our meeting is published on the Council's website by close of business tomorrow. A notice to everyone here that whilst we do try to avoid capturing people's faces in the live stream, there is a chance that that will happen. So please be on notice that your image may be captured in that live stream and on the video. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of our council business team at the end of the meeting, and our council business team are just here. Kate and Jody, thank you. If we could ask everyone to check their mobile phones and make sure they're on silent or off for the duration of the meeting, that would be most appreciated. Thank you very much. The agenda this evening comprises six reports from management and one item of general business, and an apology has been received from Councillor Watts. Before we get going, I'd like to read out some statements on behalf of councillors in the City of Melbourne, given the start that we've had to this year. So the start to 2020 has been both devastating and unprecedented for our state and our country. We believe it's important that everyone here at the City of Melbourne takes this opportunity to offer our most sincere condolences to the many communities that have been affected by this summer's bushfire crisis. Five Victorians lost their lives, and hundreds of people have lost their homes, property, livestock, and of course all of us have lost so many assets of our natural assets and wildlife that have been impacted by the fires. Whole communities have been forced to endure terrifying conditions for days on end. We all saw the pictures of thousands of people huddled together on the beach at Mallacoota, where the afternoon sun was completely blacked out by thick smoke. The only positive to come out of these horrendous fires are the many inspiring stories of humanity, where people have come together to save lives, to rescue animals, and to protect property. The City of Melbourne has also provided support by opening up a relief centre at the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Centre. The people who were evacuated from Mallacoota by Navy ship were taken to the relief centre and were offered support from a range of organisations in addition to ours, including the Salvation Army, insurance companies and lots of other agencies there to help, which was fantastic. We are also preparing to extend our support to bushfire-affected councils to be able to do our bit as those communities recover. It's going to be a long process that may take years, but we are here to offer continued help and support to the people in those communities to do what we can to help them get back on their feet. And everybody at the City of Melbourne has been incredibly forthcoming with support and offers to help, which has been fantastic. Of course, our community is also contending with the global impact of the novel coronavirus. We would like to reiterate the advice of our health authorities that there is no significant risk to our community at this time, and it's important for all of us to rely on factual information rather than fear and rumour. As always, good personal hygiene, such as hand washing, is a common sense approach to protecting yourself and others, and we recommend this to everyone. Unfortunately, our local businesses here in the City of Melbourne and other city municipalities are experiencing a significant decline in visitors and customers as a result of the virus. We need to show our support by reassuring people that it's safe to visit our city. Just as it's important to visit towns in the communities affected by fires, it's important to also support our local traders and hospitality venues and other people trading in the city. Our thoughts are with the local Chinese community, including students and businesses who seem particularly affected at this time, and we are encouraging Melburnians to be supportive and respectful towards all members of our community. Tianjin is our sister city. It's 40 years this year, our longest sister city relationship and the longest sister city relationship that exists between China and Australia. And we will continue to work with our sister municipality there in Tianjin to work out the best way to commemorate this historical and very important landmark in the current context. Finally, we thought it was great to actually repeat the wise words of Consul General Long Zhou at the Chinese New Year Festival in Chinatown on Sunday. And in his speech, he said this: "It is time for facts, not fear. It is time for science, not rumours. And it is time for solidarity, not division." And that's certainly an approach that we endorse and will follow through. Tonight, we also wanted to pay tribute to the late John Cain and his tremendous contribution to Melbourne and Victoria, particularly as Premier in the 80s and early 90s. His state memorial service at St Paul's Cathedral yesterday was attended by people from all walks of life and all sides of politics, reflecting his contribution. To this day, our city benefits from many reforms during his era of leadership. Extended shop trading hours and the transformation of our liquor laws, which has led to a very sophisticated and cosmopolitan city here in Melbourne. His vision also delivered Rod Laver Arena and that area there, transformed South Bank and encouraged us to do more to embrace our river, something we are still endeavouring to do more of. There are many other significant reforms, including gender equality and fairness, and looking at ways that we can increase diversity and acceptance in our community. Above all, John Cain's decency and integrity were the qualities most spoken about yesterday, and that is perhaps his most important legacy from a lifetime of serving the community and the public good. On behalf of the City of Melbourne and my fellow councillors, I offer condolences to John's family and his friends. Thank you for listening to those statements and our intent. We'll now move on with the business of the meeting. I'm advising members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six members voting in favour of it, that decision can be referred by a councillor to council for decision. Clear as mud. Item two, disclosure of conflicts of interest. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, could you please disclose the type and nature of that interest prior to consideration of that item? Thank you, councillors. We now come to confirmation of minutes of the previous meeting. I'm calling on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 69 that was held on the 3rd of December 2019. Councillor, Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Wood, and seconded by Councillor Pinder. Thank you. Councillors, we're putting this first motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we can declare that motion carried. Thank you. I'm asking councillors now, are there any matters arising from those minutes that you'd like to discuss at this point? None. Thank you. Now, the following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code. And we'll go through each of those, so please bear with me in relation to request to speak and submissions received. In relation to Agenda Item 6.1, which is Ministerial Planning Referral TPMR-2019-9, 539 to 557 Collins Street and 43 to 61 King Street, Melbourne, request to speak from Simon Stockfield, Charter Hall, and Simon Hausiger. Was I close? Excellent, thank you. From Cox Architecture, Simon. And items of correspondence from Simon Stockfield, Simon Hausiger, and Daniel Sussan from Tract. In relation to Agenda Item 6.2, Ministerial Planning Referral TPM-2017-11, /A, which is 3 to 43 Waterfront Way, Docklands, we have a request to speak from L. Harrington, SJB Architecture and Planning, and an item of correspondence also from L. Harrington. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, TPM-2019-22, which is 102 to 115 and 107 to 109 and 115 to 117, Boundary Road and part of, you gave me this, thank you, 59 to 101, Alfred Street, North Melbourne, we have an item of correspondence from Jeff Leach. In relation to Agenda Item 6.4, Planning Scheme Amendments C372, which is the North Melbourne Football Club signage, 204 to 206 Arden Street, North Melbourne, a request to speak from Chris Thrum and an item of correspondence from Chris Thrum. In relation to Agenda Item 6.5, Planning Scheme Amendments C278, Sunlight to Public Parks, a request to speak from Rupert Meyer. In relation to that item, there were 29 items of correspondence received, and they are on our website. Thank you very much. In relation to Agenda Item 6.6, Post-Travel Report by Councillor Louis, Business Partner City Roundtable, Bandung, Indonesia and Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, an item of correspondence from Chris Thrum. I'm going to ask now if there's anybody here this evening who wanted to speak, but I did not say their name, so that we can capture that now, just in case something went missing. No, thank you. In accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code, we're moving on to question time. We allow 15 minutes at the start and at the end of each of our future Melbourne Committee meetings for members of the public to ask questions. Actually, before I go on to that, because I was going to talk about how we do that, I just would like to advise everybody who's been asked to speak tonight that we do have a 3-minute limit to submissions. We have a counter clock here. It counts down. When it gets to 2 minutes, there are beeps to let you know you have 1 minute left, and then it beeps again at the end of 3 minutes, and after that we'll ask you to finalise and take your seat. So if you could be aware of that. In question time, we allow this time for questions. Questions should be no longer than 90 seconds, and again, use the countdown clock to help you with that. And they really are questions. It's not a time for making submissions on items that are on the agenda. It is a time for members of the public to be able to come and ask questions without notice, which is a great opportunity. And if you forget your question now, there's another 15 minutes at the end of the meeting. So if you do have a question, if I can ask you to put your hands up, we'll get people's names and then we'll call you up one by one to the podium just here. Any questions at this stage of the meeting? Is that you, Chris?
Yes, it is.
It is? Good. Any other questions? Sorry, I couldn't quite see you there. No. So, Chris, if you could please come up to the podium and ask your question, that would be terrific. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, councillors, men and women of the Kulin Nation.
and Happy New Year and Happy Chinese New Year as well. My question, the first question that I have, I've got a couple. This is the Kulin Nation and the Wurundjeri this is their country. It has been for 60,000 years. And before European settlement, they managed the land and the water in a very successful manner. And they also did backburning as well when it was required, because after 60,000 years of experience, they knew when conditions were certain, in a certain manner, that it was appropriate to do backburning to manage the environment. And one bloke who, his house is about to burn down, and he salvaged a Eugene von Gerard lithograph of Bukan and the Valley of Bukan. And it showed that the woodlands of Bukan had no undergrowth, and that it was being managed by the local Aboriginal population. So my question is to the management team and to the Lord Mayor, in future, would it be possible to, when at meetings, to discuss remedies to what we're facing in the future with climate change, could we incorporate the approach of the First Nations people and their backburning techniques and seek advice from them on appropriate measures to manage the land and the water and the environment?
So I think you have a suggestion for us there, Chris, in terms of incorporating that approach into reports that come up in the future, or was there a particular report you wanted?
Not specific report, but just have the City of Melbourne have a posture of taking that approach into meetings to encourage the adaptation of First Nation policies in regards to land management, which they did for 60,000 years.
All right, great. CEO, take that on board and something that we'll endeavour to incorporate as appropriate going forward.
Because it's in the environment portfolio, but our city with nature strategy explicitly states our support for caring for country principles in the city. So it's certainly a principle and a philosophy that we've explored, and we've done some research in that space as well.
So. All right, thanks.
Thank you.
And I've got another question.
Yep.
It relates to Councillor Nicholas Rees's agenda item coming up into attending the global conference for climate change. But I know that there are school children who in time will be listening to this and who are very concerned about the environment and climate change. And some parents and children have this disbelief that government is doing nothing at all in regards to climate. Contrary to that, I think most people in this room are aware of the great work that the City of Melbourne is doing in regards to combating climate change and climate change mitigation strategies. I was wondering either the Lord Mayor or Councillor Cathy Oak could respond to the scenario that we've been facing and with climate change in the future, and address the school children of Victoria and tell them that Melbourne City Council is sincere in combating climate change and is doing the best efforts that it can to ensure a better, brighter future for Melbourne.
I'll say just to start, and Councillor Oak. So, and Chris, you're a very active member of our community, so thank you for the question. You will remember that last year we declared a climate emergency, and that part of that motion was for our management to actually come back with a report that showed how we are responding to the fact that this is a critical situation and something that requires and a situation that requires expediency and urgency, and so you will see this come up in future agendas as well. And I'll defer to Cathy for any particular comments. No, good.
Thanks.
Any other councillors?
Sorry, Chris. I think one of the can I just say, from in terms of. We had, in terms of management coming back to us on that issue, it would be really interesting for us to think about, though, the numbers of school children that we have that go to school here in Melbourne, and actually their concern and their real concern, as Chris mentions, about the action that is happening on this issue, and that if we could think about how we communicate our commitment and what we are doing, it may support young people in knowing that at least some politicians in some places are listening and are trying to act in significant and serious ways.
Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for your participation. Councillors?
Lord Mayor, can I just move a procedural motion? We're about to start agenda item 6. I'd like to move that we bring agenda item 6.5 to the front of the queue, please.
Good, and I was just about to say that we are moving a motion that's coming up on... I'm looking for somebody to move the motion that's coming up on the screen. Oh, it's not. I'm looking for a councillor to move...
Just move.
Would you want me to read the whole thing out?
It's the same effect.
Okay. It's moved by you. It's seconded by the Deputy Lord Mayor, and that means that we have resolved... Oh, sorry. Councillors, all those in favour of a motion to bring 6.5 to the front? I think we all followed that. Okay, that means that that was unanimous, so we have effectively resolved the order of business be amended to allow agenda item 6.5, Amendment C278 Sunlight to Parks, to come forward as the first agenda item this evening, just so everybody knows where we're at. And I'm going to call on Councillor Nicholas Rees as Chair of the Planning Portfolio to take over chairing the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Lord Mayor. There are 5 reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio this evening, and as a result of the amended agenda, the first of those is agenda item 6.5, which is for planning scheme amendment C278 Sunlight to Public Parks. Now, I believe there are a number of councillors who have indicated they may have a conflict in regards to this agenda, and so I'm looking to councillors to declare a conflict where that exists. I might do this systematically, so starting at this end.
Sure, thanks, Chair. I'll declare a conflict of interest under Section 78C of the Act. The nature of the conflict is a donor to the by-election campaign in 2018, is a owner of property that is impacted by the introduction of a new overlay as part of this amendment.
Chair, I have a conflict, an indirect conflict, conflicting duties, because my employer, the University of Melbourne, also has land that is, considered under this matter.
Thank you. Councillor Pinder.
Chair, I too declare conflict of interest under Section 78C being a campaign donation.
And, Chair, I too declare an indirect interest under 78C, a campaign donation by an affected property owner.
Chair, I declare an indirect interest under Section 78C by virtue of a campaign donation of a property owner in the area.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Councillor Riley.
Thank you. I have received a campaign donation, so I do declare 78C, and it is a direct interest in the planning scheme amendment C278.
Thank you, Councillor Riley.
I too declare a conflict of interest under section indirect interest under Section 78C as part of a campaign donation.
Thank you, Councillor Leeloo. Councillor Louis.
Thank you, Chair. I too declare a conflict of interest under Section 78C, having received a campaign donation from an affected owner.
Thank you, Councillor Louis. And I too also face a conflict on this item due to my employment at the University of Melbourne and also a campaign donation receipts. So I was about to say it's the Nick Francis Gillie show, but in fact I think we have fallen in court, so I'll hand over to you, CEO Justin Hanning.
Thanks, Thank you, Councillor Rees, as he leaves the room. Councillor Francis Giller, you could have a field day right now if you were a quorum, but you are not. So my name is Justin Henney. I'm the CEO at the City of Melbourne. Due to the number of councillors who have declared their conflict of interest in this matter, the required quorum for this meeting has been lost and the meeting has therefore lapsed. A loss of quorum means the matter cannot be considered at this meeting, nor at a future meeting in the term of this council due to the conflict, given the number of councillors who have individually declared a conflict of interest. As there's no constituted meeting, we can't hear verbal submissions. However, I don't believe there is anyone here who wanted to make a verbal submission. Can I just check that in the room? Sure. No, look, that. Okay, look, I'll give a response to that in just a second. So what is now to occur? So what we did have was all of submitters were contacted last week. They were contacted via email, and where we had telephone numbers, they were all individually called also to let them know that they couldn't make submission. However, all written submissions have been reviewed and considered. Just before I answer your question, I'll just ask our Acting General Manager of Strategy, Planning and Climate Change, Emma Appleton, just to come up to the podium to describe what the process is for consideration, because there is a well-worn path of process where councils can't form a quorum on these matters and how they'll get considered. So, Emma, if you could come up and just explain to the gallery. The Acting General Manager is Emma Appleton.
Good evening. My name is Emma Appleton and I'm the Acting General Manager of Strategy, Planning and Climate Change. As a result of the loss of quorum for this item, Planning Scheme Amendment C278, Sunlight to Public Parks, I'll be making the decision under delegation. I intend to make my decision in accordance with the management recommendation printed in the agenda papers. For transparency with our community, tomorrow I'll publish the details of my decision on the C278 page on our Participate Melbourne website. Thank you.
Thank you, Emma. So just to answer the question in terms of donations, all donations are declared by councillors, so they're available on their website. So, I can't cross-reference where they specifically are, but what you'll find is, and if I just use Councillor Oak as an example, Councillor Oak works at Melbourne University. Melbourne University is impacted, therefore she's excused herself. Where someone has said there's a campaign donation, it could be that they've made a donation to the Lord Mayor standing as Lord Mayor, and so it could be a company that owns a property, but all donations that our councillors or our Lord Mayor have received are all publicly disclosed. They're available on the website and you can identify, you can open those up and have a look at them. I can certainly tell you this, there's no councillor that's not, you know, fully aware of having to declare those publicly, so they're not private donations. Any donation to them is a public donation and is registered and declared. So the consultation has occurred, which is the ability to make submissions. So the consultation to ensure people can make submissions. What's critically important here is that the panel is independently appointed by the minister. We refer it to panel. Anyone who has lodged a submission can be heard at that panel. So that is the process, and the process is well, as I said, it's a well-worn path under the Local Government Act where there are conflicts. The process that we've outlined is what occurs. So the panel is where anyone who has made a submission can speak to that submission, and it will be considered by panel. On that note, I'm going to invite councillors back into the room so we can resume the meeting. If there was someone who did want to speak and didn't put up your hand earlier or wants further explanation of the process, either Kate or Emma, if you can just put up your hand. Emma, Kate, if you can put up your hand, people saw Emma, feel free to approach them both directly. All right, thanks very much, Rod, if you can invite councillors back into the room.
All right, the next agenda item we are moving on to is item 6.1, Ministerial Planning Referral TPM 2019-9 for the property 539 to 557 Collins Street and 43 to 61 King Street, Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation in relation to this item? Taking that as a no, so I will now call on Simon Stockfield from Charter Hall, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. And as the Lord Mayor stated, you are reminded you have 3 minutes. We're then going to be followed by Simon. I can see you're working as a tag team tonight. Simon Hausiger, that is. Simon Stockfield, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you, councillors, for the opportunity to make some introductory and opening remarks this evening on behalf of Charter Hall. We are very excited to have the opportunity to create a landmark building on this important Collins Street address for the City of Melbourne and the inhabitants of that building. We first invested in this vision in 2015 when we purchased 55 King Street, later purchasing the adjoining 555 Collins Street site in 2018 to create a 4,500 square metre development site on a very important corner in Collins Street in Melbourne. The core of our approach is centred around humanistic design, ensuring that the human experience is at the very heart of every decision that we make. Key to this approach is the appointment of our two leading design firms. For 555 Collins Street, Charter Hall elected to collaborate with one of Australia's largest multidisciplinary firms, Cox Architecture, as well as leading global workplace design practice, Gensler. Cox Architecture has been on this journey with us from 2015, and Simon Hussinger will shortly address Council on the design vision for this exciting project. Gensler is one of the world's leading design firms, known for their pioneering approach to workplace design, with work including Google, Facebook, Microsoft and Apple. Our goal is to design a future-focused building that meets the tenants' needs and allows collaboration between international and local knowledge. The depth of the design team knowledge in architecture and workplace enabled the team to clearly define the future needs and wants of our tenant customers. Beyond creating a landmark building, our vision is to create a workplace experience like no other, where people feel connected, inspired and engaged through their workday. Upon completion, 555 Collins Street will be a new landmark building for Melbourne, which will form part of the wider investment in Melbourne's Midtown. The Midtown precinct is experiencing a period of positive change, with the large tenants, investors and property owners investing in the rejuvenation of the precinct. This building will result in 35 levels of premium grade office space across approximately 80,000 square metres over the two-stage development. Technology-enabled 555 Collins Street will provide a future-focused and innovative technology to allow our tenants to move swiftly with the technology advances to support their workday. The building will also be one of the city's most sustainable buildings, with a 6-star Green Star rating, a 5.5-star Neighbours rating and a Platinum WELL certification. Whilst in planning forums, we talk a lot about design and delivery. At Charter Hall, we plan to own, operate and curate the community in this building for many years after it is completed. This corner site used to be occupied by the Federal Coffee Palace, which Simon will talk to you further in the design vision. Finally, I'd like to thank the city planners and urban designers from the City of Melbourne for their interest and participation in the development of our scheme for this site. Thank you, and I'll hand to Simon.
Thank you, Simon. And now Simon from Cox.
Thank you, Simon. As Simon mentioned, we've been involved in this site from a very 5 or 6 years ago now, in 2015, for a very long time. And we've joined in concert with Gensler to create this design vision for Charter Hall. At the start of our process, we went on a worldwide trip. We set a really big task for ourselves to do a series of benchmark tours and workshops to establish the project vision. We mapped experiences from the viewpoint of all users of the building, so from potential tenants in the building and also the general public, and to welcome the city into the space. Along with mapping the user journeys, we also developed a series of principles for the project itself. So the project was to be human, the experience is to be human, the space is to be engaging, duality, where we celebrate the diversity of people using the space and reflect. They need to be reflected in the way that the building is programmed. It's dynamic. We acknowledge that the constant evolution in the way that we live and work. And layering of experience to make sure it's unique every day. As Simon mentioned, along with mapping all the experiences and creating the vision for the project, we also established a deep learning of what was on the site previously last century. The original building on site, the Federal Coffee Palace, we really discovered that this building, such a beautiful building that was knocked down to create the current building there on site. And we had this idea of creating place. And we saw that some of the spaces within the existing Coffee Palace really are about what we try to incorporate in buildings today. So a grand arrival, fantastic social spaces, and really creating that sense of address and place. Our proposal was really about carving out place and creating pedestrian flows and desire lines that ensured that those spaces were memorable. And how that comes together as a broader precinct, so Collins Street to the north, King Street to the right-hand side of the page, and really engaging with the existing infrastructure on site at 567. New linkages, new public linkages along our site. An axonometric showing that public gesture of a new plaza on Collins Street. The way the heavy sandstone base can be inhabited and activated throughout the changing retail models in the evolution of the building. And a view from Collins Street. The changing character along Flinders Lane, and we worked really collaboratively with council to develop a diversity within the expression of the building along this site, a heavier base with bluestone material expression. Landscape architects' aspect of assisted with the new public link, incorporating landscape and a pedestrian environment, and the way that can be activated. Material qualities in the building that can be seen from many scales, street, the midsection, and also the skyline scale. Thank you, councillors.
Thanks for that, Simon. And look, I must start by saying that there is much to admire about this proposal in terms of the design. Cox and Gensler have done a very, very good job. There's lots of very clever features to the design of this building. I just wanted to ask a question about something that comes up in the officer's report. I'm referring here to page 101, and in particular the facade strategy, where there's a requirement for further detail around the facade strategy, including materials and finishes, and in particular further detail on each facade type to ensure the upper form reads as two separate forms and a distinct architectural expression. So you know, this is a very big building, particularly when you look at it from the eastern elevation along King Street. And so I just want to know what your view is about the design review there and how you plan to address this issue of providing stronger rebate and a stronger sense of breaking up that mass of the tower.
Thank you. So we have worked in collaboration, consultation with the... Whoops, this doesn't go backwards.
If you go back to the initial photo on the front page, you can sort of see the building from the east.
This has stopped working, unfortunately. There's probably a better slide if we skip. Potentially one more back. Look, there is a gasket that we've created between the two phases of the building, and we've worked with the City of Melbourne to explore further relief in that gasket to create separation between the built form and the skyline. There's some work to do with the City of Melbourne to resolve that completely, but I think we've demonstrated over time that we've managed to resolve these sorts of conditions in facade strategy conditions before in our past projects.
All right, thank you. Any further questions for Simon and Simon? Sounds like a name of a band. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for the for addressing us this evening. There should be now a motion which will be going up on the screen. And I, as Chair of Planning, am happy to move that motion. I call for a councillor to second the motion. Thank you, Councillor Rohan Leppert. I will speak to this item. I'm glad those presentations referenced the Federal Coffee Palace because, indeed, that was one of the most marvellous buildings of the marvellous Melbourne era. And the Federal Coffee Palace is often spoken of as the building that is most missed in terms of being lost from that era. God knows what they were thinking when they sat in this building back in 1973 and approved its demolition. Just an act of vandalism on our city. So, look, it's only fitting to see that this quite ambitious proposal is coming forward. That has been very, very well designed and it will achieve a very, very high standard for this end of the city. For too long, I think Collins Street's been known as having the Paris end and the other end, but with what's happened, I think, next door to you at 559, with what you're proposing, we really are seeing a renaissance of the west end of Collins Street, so it returns to its glory of the marvellous Melbourne era. In terms of the specific design around this proposal, I think there's a lot to like about it. It's particularly pleasing to see the new north-south laneway, which you're going to offer 24 access along. It is a real fair dinkum laneway where you'll be able to see sky. We like that. And also it's going to have active frontage as well with retail and so forth. That's terrific. That's going to create another fantastic laneway for Melbourne where there wasn't one previously. So absolutely well done there. Also very much like the new public plaza, which is going to be built at the northwest corner of this development site. That will, I think that's well integrated with the site next door as well. So that's going to be a really terrific active part of the city as well. And overall, good to see that this proposal is consistent with C308 Planning Scheme Amendment and the Melbourne Design Guide, which is now very much subject to active consideration. So good to see you've taken that into account. There are some other recommendations by the officers here, which I'd be expecting that you will comply with some minor changes to height. And in particular, I'm pleased to hear that there's going to be some further detail coming forward around that facade strategy, because it is a very large building and it is a co-joined building. And so I am keen to see that there is some further relief or shaping of those upper levels so it doesn't just look like, you know, an entire mass of glass. So on that note, I'm very, very happy to support the motion and to support this development. Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Chair. I agree. This is a really high-quality application, and it's obviously a lot of great work that's happened between the applicant and our officers here and the officers at DELP, subject to dropping the street wall height on King Street towards the south of the two-stage building to match the requirements of the DDO and all of the other standard conditions that we're suggesting. I think the Minister should certainly be endorsing this application.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? Councillor Oak.
I know you weren't expecting me to speak, but I thought it'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge. I support the resolution. I acknowledge that it's very rare that we receive an application that exceeds the bicycle parking limit. So I'd like to acknowledge that this is well exceeding, and I appreciate that.
Wonderful. Any other speakers for or against? Okay, in that case, I'll now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hands, and I'm declaring that carried. First bit of business for the year done. All right, move on to our next agenda item, 6.2, Ministerial Planning Referral TPM 2017-11/A. This is for the property 3-43 Waterfront Way in the Docklands. Would councillors like a presentation in relation to this item? I'm going to take that as a no, and so I will now call on Ellie Harrington from SJP Architecture and Planning, who represented the requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. And Ellie, I remind you, please speak for no more than 3 minutes.
No problems. Thank you, councillors, for the opportunity to speak to this matter tonight. My name is Ellie Harrington, and I'm from SJB Planning, the planning consultancy that have been assisting the applicant with this development since its conception. So the application before you tonight is an amendment to the existing planning approval that was granted by the Minister for 3-43 Waterfront Way, which you'll be aware is at an advanced stage of construction. I think they're up to level 12 at present. The amendment before you utilises opportunities made available by the recent approval of the addendum to the Waterfront City Outline Development Plan that occurred in December of last year. As is outlined in the officer report, the amendment seeks to increase the height of the approved development by approximately 9.56 metres or three levels, and does not seek to modify any component of the approved development below level 16. The number of dwellings will decrease by one as a result of the changes proposed, and each new dwelling will be provided with high levels of internal amenity and generous areas of private open space as well. The amendment proposes an outcome that accords with the objectives of the recently approved addendum, in particular with respect to height, noting that the height's lower than that's contemplated by the addendum, setbacks, shadows, and off-site amenity. Importantly, the additional levels propose a built form outcome which maintains the architectural integrity of the development as a whole, allowing the additional form to seamlessly blend with the curved form and presentation of the lower levels. In conclusion, the applicant respectfully requests the committee to lend its support tonight in line with the recommendation of officers to an amended development which maintains the integrity of the existing approval currently under construction, will continue to contribute to the emerging character of Docklands and accords with the objectives of the recently approved addendum. Thank you for the opportunity to present.
Thank you, Ellie. Any questions for Ellie? No. Thank you. Oh, sorry. Councillor Pinder.
Thank you, Ellie. I just want to ask you in relation to the Melbourne Star. Has any consideration been given to the impact on the vista of the Melbourne Star in this particular instance?
The consideration of the vista from the Star was considered heavily during the conception of the addendum process and as part of its approval. And I think you'll recall we consulted with the Star as part of that process. The addendum has now been approved, so as part of the amendment application, because the amendment's generally in accordance with the concept plans and the built form objectives of the addendum, proposing a lower height and considers vistas and what have you, there wasn't any further consultation that was done because that was done as part of the approval of the addendum that ultimately led to the controls.
Okay. Thanks, Councillor Pinder. Any further questions? No. Thank you very much, Ellie, for addressing us this evening. I will now move a motion which is up on the screen. I'm looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Lippitt, and I will now speak briefly to this item. This site does indeed have quite a long history. It was way back in 2003, 17 years ago, that the development plan was endorsed. It initially had a 25-metre discretionary height limit. Then 10 years later, it got increased to around 50 metres. There was then an application in 2016 to take it to 110 metres. That got knocked back here in this place. There was a ministerial refusal there. It then went back to 58 metres back in 2017. Then we were back here last year with the addendum, and now we are here again this evening. So there you go. It's got quite a long and fascinating history to it. As was mentioned by Ellie, there was a Waterfront City Outline Development Plan 2003 addendum approved by by Council in October 2019 and by the Minister in December 2019. This application, which seeks approval for an additional three levels, does satisfy the requirements of the recently approved addendum. It also remains consistent with relevant provisions of the Melbourne Planning Scheme and on balance will make a positive contribution to the local area and wider Docklands precinct, with the new Marriott Hotel very welcome there in Docklands. So on that basis, I'm happy to support it. Councillor Leppett.
I agree.
Are there any other councillors who would like to speak for or against this motion? In that case, I'll put the matter to a vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Thank you, Councillor Louis, declaring that carried unanimously. The next agenda item is agenda item 6.3, TPMR 2019-22, for the properties 102 to 115, 107 to 19, 115 to 117 Boundary Road and part of 59 to 101 Alfred Street, North Melbourne. This is an application which is well known to many councillors and has some history to it, so I might actually request that Officer Jane Birmingham please give us a short presentation on this item.
Great, thank you. Members of the public, councillors, thank you for your attention tonight. I'll give a very brief overview of this application. The applicant is the Share Project, care of Orb Property Partners, and there's actually two architects for this development. Bailey Ward has designed Building A, and Fender Katsalidis has designed the second building. The owner is the Share Project. As we can see, this is a very, very large site. It's actually in four parcels at the moment, with the property at 111 to 113 Boundary Road not being part of this application. This site has an area of around 1.2 hectares, and these sites 1,500 roughly and 750 metres roughly as well. The application relates to the first half of what is to be perhaps a two-stage development. There is a second application in with the Minister for Planning for the western half of the site at the present time. This site is within the Arden-Macaulay urban renewal area, and the controls relevant to this site are the mixed-use zone DDO 63, Part A7, the Development Contributions Plan Overlay 2 and the Environmental Audit Overlay. I will try and run through this quite quickly, but broadly the applications for two 12-storey buildings known as Buildings A and B, and they will contain dwellings, shop, offices and food and drink premises. Essentially there will be shared basement facilities for this building, containing all the car parking, servicing and loading facilities. In relation to car parking, I'll just advise that there's 76 spaces for Building A, 105 for Building B and 118 unallocated spaces in what could potentially be a public car parking facility. The bike requirements more than comply with the requirements of the planning scheme. So this is Building A, and again, I'll run through this quickly. Building A is on the northwestern corner of the site and proposes retail at ground floor, two retail units within the order of 500 square metres. As we go up the building, there's a total of 75 dwellings with a good mix of apartment types. When we go up, there's also a communal roof terrace available for this site. In relation to the building form, what we have is an overall height, as I've mentioned, of 12 storeys, around about 47 metres, and a high two-level podium to all street frontages. The height varies across the site due to the varied topography. Here we have the elevation to Boundary Road and the rear elevation to the right. In terms of the DDO requirements, what it talks about is a six-storey preferred street wall, and above the street wall, a setback of 1 metre for every 1 metre of height above 20 metres, so an angled setback above the podium form. In regards to overall height, up to 9 storeys overall height is preferred, with an opportunity to go up to 12 storeys if appropriate public benefits are offered in relation to the site. These are the renders in relation to the development. As you can see, we have this high two-storey colonnade form of brick, and that general sort of form of brick and the archways continues up the building. Just move on to Building B, which is at the southeastern corner of this site. This is a larger site and proposes a central arcade leading to a shared lobby with a whole series of retail units around it and a publicly accessible terrace to the rear. The retail space is in the order of 845 square metres. We go up to first floor and there's an office of around 1,100 square metres. And over the next levels, up to level 12, is a series of 94 dwellings, again with a good mix of dwelling types. In relation to setbacks, at the upper levels, the building sits about 11.5 metres from the Boundary Road frontage and about 4.5 metres from those side boundaries. Again, there's a communal roof terrace proposed for this building. Similarly to the other building, this has a height of 12 storeys with a more conventional 6-storey podium to the lower levels. Again, here we can see what the DDO talks about. While it's not infilling this section here, it is encroaching at those upper levels 10 and 12. And then just here we have some views. Again, it's that brick topography, and this is a view from Boundary Road to the southeast and to the northwest. Yes, so that is what's proposed. It is a large development and a large proposal. I probably should also say that the reason the matter's been brought tonight is that it's been referred from the Minister for Planning to Council. There is a failure appeal that's been lodged by the permit applicant, and there will be a compulsory conference held very soon in February. There's also, as I mentioned, the concurrent application for the balance of the site in with the Minister at the moment. And there are also two smaller subdivision applications that are also under consideration at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Are there any questions from councillors for Jane? No. Okay, thank you very much for that presentation. There is a motion in relation to this matter. I'll now request that that please be put on the screen. And I will move that motion, and I'm looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. I'll speak briefly to this item. I've got to say, as a person who spends a good part of my week assessing planning applications here in our great city, it's extremely frustrating to find myself here tonight looking at this motion and looking at this application. I know there has been so many hours put in by the proponent as well as by the City of Melbourne, hours that have been invested to try and get us to an alignment of visions, but very sadly that is just not the case and we are not there. Look, at its, I guess, most basic, the proposal that was lodged with the City does not comply with DDO 63, which sets out the built form and massing controls for this part of the city. In terms of Building A, the controls support a six-storey street wall and then a setback with potentially up to a further six storeys. Instead, we've got a two-storey podium and a 10-storey tower. I mean, to put it another way, we're looking for a building typology here like you'd see in somewhere like Barcelona. Instead, we've got another podium and tower like we see in so many other places around the city, but not what we are looking for in this part of the city with these very thought-through and long considered built form controls. In terms of the height under DDO 63, there's a preferred height of 9 storeys, but with public benefit, you know, there's an opportunity to get up to 12. And it was with great sadness, I've got to say, that I read the officer's report saying that the public benefit had not been demonstrated and therefore the proposal falls short on that count as well. I did note the car parking spaces proposed here provide for, I think it's something like an additional 100 spaces over what is needed for these two buildings, which then begs the question, well, what are those additional 100 additional spaces for? And that in turn begs the question, what is the overall plan for this 1.2 hectare site? It's an enormous site. It's such an opportunity for Melbourne. This precinct has huge potential for our city, and yet in the proposal before us, there's not that master plan that ties it all together and shows us how the buildings relate to each other. Things like those car parks relate to the overall development. And so, yeah, very, very unfortunately, it falls short. I do note that the proponent is here this evening, and I want him to know that I still very much hope that we can get our visions to align on this site. We're not there at the moment. I hear from Officer Birmingham, and obviously I'm aware that it seems like we're all off to VCAT, which is something which, frankly, I would always try to avoid, but it is what it is. There's a compulsory hearing coming up. Let's see where that gets to. But, yeah, I'm speaking in support of the motion that is there on the screen. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. I agree. The sites for Building A and Building B are eminently developable sites, as is the larger site to the west. However, the application for those two sites and the extended car park are over developments of the site that don't match the building typology that is envisaged for this area. And so while I share the aspiration that in future we'll be looking at a scheme that's going to be a high quality, wonderful contribution to this urban renewal area, this isn't it, and this shouldn't be allowed to be the precedent for what we have envisaged in the area. There are aspects that are very positive about the application, especially in Building B. I think that there's a lot of good strategies that have gone into designing that building. But as I said, the building topology is wrong for the site. There's a podium and tower at Building A when a six-storey street wall height is envisaged with built form above that visually recessive. We don't have that at all. We have a 12-storey building straight up as viewed from the other side of Boundary Road at least. And we can't fix that by condition. Now, the Minister's the responsible authority, not us, but normally where we could, we'd be suggesting how to amend an application through Condition 1 plans that, that change street wall heights or that change overall heights, but you can't do that for an application like this, given the extent of the difference between what's envisaged in DDO 63 and what's actually proposed. The process is also worth noting very quickly. So there was no advertising for this application because the Minister is the responsible authority, and as I understand it, the department didn't get to advertising before the issue was sent to VCAT on a failure appeal. That does mean that the normal notice and advertising objection processes weren't available. That's normal when something goes straight to VCAT, but it's pretty rare that it goes straight to VCAT before the responsible authorities had a chance to advertise it. That does mean that this application has also gone through a little less scrutiny as far as the local community and other interested landholders and other interested parties are concerned. And whilst that's all legitimate under the Act, because this all happened in a particular order, I think it is noteworthy that there was no notice or advertising for this. And so VCAT will be the forum that this matter is heard. And for the reasons in the very thorough report, and I commend the officers for putting it together, we do need to object to this application. I look forward to seeing what might come after this saga is over. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Lippitt. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? Lord Mayor.
Thank you. I did want to comment. I appreciate the work that's gone into this from our officers, from the proponent, and also from our councillors who are involved in the planning portfolio. I felt it was worthwhile making some comments from a councillor that's not as close as you and is looking at this from the papers that have come forward and the discussions. I think, and to reiterate some of the things that have been said, this is such an important part of our city where we do want to see development. It is there for urban renewal, and we welcome more residents, more businesses, more retail, and that's part of the ambition that we do have. But as you both Councillor Rees and Leppard have said, the big issue seems to be here, that alignment between the ambition that we have as a city and community about urban renewal and how it is implemented and some of the essential features of that vis-a-vis the ambitions of the developer. And what we really want to be able to see by whatever process, and this seems like it's going to be more of an adversarial process, is how we can bring those together, because we have the same goal of creating great development in this neighbourhood so that there are more spaces to share right across those different uses. As is noted in the report, one of the major features is the interaction between the sites, absolutely important for being able to understand the uses that are going to be developed there and how appropriate public benefit can be delivered. And that's something we just can't see in the way that this application has unfolded and the steps that have been taken. And particularly if there are public benefits to be delivered in the later stages of the project, unfortunately it can't be considered in this application. So it's just I guess a reflection of the approach that is being taken means that we can't fully see what might be the intended ambition around public benefit that can add so much value to this project. So the last comment is just about sufficient detail and information for officers and councillors to be able to really have that certainty and confidence across the sites as to what is intended and what will be delivered. And hopefully, as we've said, that as this process goes on, we can find a way of bringing the alignment of approaches together so that we end up with the same goal, which is fabulous urban renewal in this precinct that is so deserving and that will be so welcomed. And from all those comments, I'm letting you know that I'll be supporting this motion.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Any other speakers for or against? Okay, in that case, I will put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, please raise your hands. I'm declaring that carried unanimously.
Okay, the next item before us is agenda item 6.4. That's for Planning Scheme Amendment C372, North Melbourne Football Club signage, 204 to 206 Arden Street, North Melbourne. Councillor Francis Gilley.
I have an indirect conflict of interest due to a receipt of an applicable gift under section 78C because I took guests and went to the grand final breakfast there.
Thank you, Councillor Francis Gilley. Now, I believe there is an amendment to the motion, Councillor Leppard. I'm just looking to you on this.
Not an amendment. I'm suggesting a new motion might be the fastest and easiest way to deal with this.
If there is an alternative motion, there we go.
I'm happy to second it if you'd like to move it.
Yeah, so I'm going to move this alternative motion. I'm looking for a councillor to second it. I'm taking that as seconded, and we will first of all, let me check if there is any councillors who would like a presentation on this item. No? Okay. I've already moved it, so that would be putting it the other way around. And I'm going to call on Chris Thrum, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes. We'll get there, don't worry.
Thank you, Councillor Nicholas Rees, councillors, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, men and women of the Kulin Nation. I support the recommendation from management in regards to the specific control overlays in regards to the signage. This is one of the favourite metiers of Councillor Nicholas Rees in regards to signage and making it subtle and sophisticated. So I'm sure he's been looking forward to this agenda item for many days. It's a fact. North Melbourne Football Club is one of the great storied football clubs of the AFL. It's well respected and it's worthy to be supported by the City of Melbourne. One suggestion I would have is that as well as the internal advertising on the oval, City of Melbourne should consider the possibility of including as well external advertising on the outside of the oval as well, which wouldn't really impinge on the impact to the public. I think also too possibly like further on-ground advertising. This might be outside the remit of these signages, but to allow North Melbourne Football Club to have on-site, on-ground advertising could be appropriate as well. City of Melbourne too, of course, is a partner with the North Melbourne Football Club, with the North Melbourne Recreation Centre. The North Melbourne Football Club trains at the Recreation Centre as well and utilises it. And I think City of Melbourne should look to the future and possibly ramp up possibilities of development of that site in the next 20 to 40 years and to include the North Melbourne Football Club to expand facilities as well. So in conclusion, we do support the North Melbourne Football Club. I think it's appropriate that we do. And I'm looking forward to Councillor Nicholas Rees's sophisticated analyses of this agenda item.
Thank you, Chris Thrum. You spoke most eloquently and with much truth with that submission.
Thank you.
Are there any questions for Chris Thrum? No, I'll keep moving, Ben. As councillors already know, I have moved the alternative motion which appeared on the screen, and Councillor Leppard has seconded it for the second time, indeed. Look, much as I'd like to take up Chris Thrum's invitation to speak at length and eloquently about Melbourne's signage, I won't, except to say that I am indeed a great fan of Melbourne's heritage signs, Skipping Girl and all the rest. Not such a big fan of some of the monster LCD video screens that seem to be popping up around the city, particularly in some cases on the back of telephone boxes. In this particular case, we had a promotional sign on part of the North Melbourne Football Club's oval fence. It's been in place for several decades, but were not considered as part of the suite of signs approved through Amendment C172 and therefore did not have
actual approval. The City of Melbourne was alerted to this by a good burger of our community, which I think Councillor Leppert will speak to in a moment, and the North Melbourne Football Club has requested the amendment to make the oval signs lawful, and that's what the proposal before us does, and I am happy to support. Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Chair. I will be supporting it as well with this very minor tweak, which I'll explain. It doesn't change the intent of the amendment, but I think it just removes one potential interpretational possibility. But this amendment, of course, is proposed by the club. We need to remember that. Of course, it is in a form that's been negotiated between the club and us, and is a proposal that we're happy with, the club seems to be happy with. And is a means to find that right balance between the need for the club to generate revenue through advertising and the need to keep this oval, what it's currently known and is known to be unique for, which is that it is an oval for community uses. It's an oval that's fully accessible by the locals, by the broader community, and whilst it's used exclusively by the club at training times, at other times, it is an oval that's there for everyone. Now, when the advertising around the oval went up quite a few years ago, now the visual barrier between the public realm and the oval was a problem, I think, because if we're enshrining this principle that the ovals needs to be a balance between club uses and community uses, then that visual barrier does become a problem. So this balanced approach makes it very clear in the planning scheme that a generous extent of advertising around the oval and elsewhere is permitted. And it has a few gaps around the oval, especially between Macaulay Road and the oval and between the club forecourt at the rear and the oval, which will ensure that that view through to the oval remains. The reason for the amendment, and it is minor, as I said, is that it would be possible in the way that the amendment and the incorporated document is currently written, under a couple of the conditions, for the responsible authority, who might be the minister rather than us or our officers under delegation, to vary what's illustrated there in the diagram at the back of the incorporated document about where the advertising around the oval could be. I just want to remove the possibility that the intent of that diagram would be lost, just to make it very, very clear in the conditions in the incorporated document that this is a community oval as well as an oval for the club, and that there's some areas around the oval where advertising is inappropriate. Again, it's minor. The amendment should be supported because it will provide clarity for everyone.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Are there any other speakers for or against this motion? In that case, I'll put the matter to a vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. And I'm declaring that carried unanimously. Oh. Councillor Oak here saying she's wish she'd got to talk about North Melbourne for a little bit. I'll now call on Councillor Louie to take the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the Prosperous City Portfolio. Councillor Louie.
Thank you very much, Councillor Rees. There's one report from management for consideration under the Prosperous City Portfolio. Agenda item 6.6 is the post-travel report by Councillor Lee, myself. Business Park, Sydney Roundtable, Bandung, Indonesia, and Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, November 2019. Would anybody like a long presentation on this item? No? No. In that case, well, I'm happy to move the agenda item if there's a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Riley.
Thank you, Councillor Louis. It's always interesting when you do go on this business partner city roundtables how much information you gain and come back to our city and fill us in on what's happening around the world. So, well done. And look forward to the next roundtable.
Sorry, it's okay, ladies first.
Kevin moved it, so Kevin as mover would speak before the seconder, unless Kevin's waived his right to speak.
It's okay. I'm happy to. I'm happy to.
Okay.
To comment later. No, please. Anyway, thank you. I'll be brief. Also, Can I start by thanking Katrina, David, and of course Megan, who was part of the trip. But the coordination of all the appointments was certainly extensive. If anything, I think we actually learnt a great deal out of Bandung as well. Being my second trip to Bandung, I think this particular current trip was certainly an eye-opener, and particularly so that the Lord Mayor led the way as well a few months earlier. But I think one of the particular highlights was, I think, the Bandung government was very enthused about a stronger relationship between Bandung and Melbourne. Certainly the discussions were more collaborative, and particularly with the visit of the mayor and the governor potentially this year. But I think one of the areas, the innovation and the incubator areas between the universities and the industry, was certainly an eye-opener, because a program they have, Block 71, was certainly something that I think, rather than for us to sell them ideas, I think we could certainly try and see if we can get Block 71 here in Melbourne. It's a one-stop shop for I would say advanced startups, certainly innovators, but certainly it's a one-stop shop where you've got venture capital, you've got everything in the one very selective process where the people that want to use the facility can't just pay and use it, but certainly they get screened, there's a panel, and certainly the only the brightest, and of course they've got a number of unicorns that's come out of that process. But apart from that, we've had great support out of the state government as well. So Lee Howard, the deputy commissioner, the Victorian government commissioner, was very supportive on the ground, particularly in KL, but with a particular focus, he's suggesting to the City of Melbourne that if there's a potential to look at Vietnam as well, there's certainly that is certainly a focus area for the Victorian government. But apart from that, so Block 71 is in collaboration and partnership with the National University of Singapore. So it's a great, I think it's a great model, and of course Bandung is looking for Melbourne for leads as well, in terms of they have a strong focus in trying to work with Startup Vic, if possible. I know there's been a few hurdles, but I think eventually we will get them a great partnership here in Melbourne as well. So I think we look forward to certainly the Mayor and the Governor's visit to further the relationship and collaboration. Thank you. Any further questions, comments? In that case, so could I put the agenda to a vote? All those in favour? Pass unanimously. Thank you. Can I call on the Lord Mayor Sally Capp to resume the chair for the remainder of the meeting? Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Louie. Well, this concludes reports from management this evening, and there is one item of general business to be considered. Item 7.1, which is participation by Councillor Nicholas Rees in the C40 Global Mayor's Summit, Copenhagen, Denmark, October 2019. Councillors, would anybody like a presentation on this item? No. I'm calling on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Rees, and a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Oak, over to you, Councillor Rees.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Look, I was honoured to be able to represent the City of Melbourne at the C40 Summit in Copenhagen, particularly given the pedigree of some of the other councillors and their awesome commitment and knowledge around climate change and sustainable cities. So I was very fortunate that it fell to me and greatly honoured. I also used the opportunity of the conference to do a bit of a deep dive on Copenhagen and the City of Copenhagen. And in fact, the Danish government were very generous with Officer Claire Ferris-Miles and myself in making themselves available to us for briefings on various aspects of how the City of Copenhagen runs. And I've got to say, it was mightily impressive. In many respects, Copenhagen is the original smart city, with their obsession with good design and clever urban planning. And so I have gone in, indeed, written a 30-page travel report about that. The earlier version ran to some 40 pages, but I was convinced that it should be pared back, and so it was. But there it is, all 30 pages of it in all its glory. I would put it to you full of ideas for and thoughts for Melbourne. A couple I'll pick up on quickly. The first is I was reminded of how important storytelling is for a city, and the story you tell about your city to the world. In the case of Copenhagen, they are a city that is proud, dare I say, obsessive about good design and urban planning, and they tell the world about that. I also, in more recent times, they market themselves as a green superpower. And while I was there, I was very impressed to see the Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen flanked by captains of industry and peak industry groups announcing that Denmark is going to cut its emissions by 70% by 2030. I mean, think about that in Australia. Here we are beating ourselves up over a 26% cut to our emissions. The certain people in politics tell us that even that is a road to serfdom for Australia, and yet there in Denmark they're committing to 70% cuts, and they're one of the most advanced, wealthiest countries in the world. In the city of Copenhagen, and I'm not just talking here about the organisation, which is the city, but I'm actually talking about the economy that is Copenhagen, they've committed to being carbon neutral by 2030. So as a city, they'll be carbon neutral by 2030. And they see that as an opportunity for their industry. And indeed, while we were there, we saw delegations of businesses from around the world coming in to see how they're doing that. Their city harbour was something that was referred to in almost every meeting we went to. In fact, I even heard the Danish Prime Minister talk very proudly about this point as well, that you can swim in the harbour of Copenhagen. And you've got to say that's got to be an inspiration for us with our Yarra River. And harbour, indeed, Lord Mayor. The Copenhagen Metro opened literally the week before we arrived. It's a brilliantly well-designed new metro, and so advanced in so many respects, and plenty, I think, for Melbourne to learn there. We learned a lot as well about the shifting in modes of transport in Copenhagen. I was interested to learn that, indeed, Copenhagen has not always been a pedestrian and cycling city. Like most cities in Europe and certainly cities in Australia, they embraced the car in sort of the decades following the Second World War, and we saw pictures of squares that had been turned into car parks and multi-lane motorways around the city. But over a series of decades, it didn't happen overnight, they have converted more roadway for pedestrians and cyclists and other forms of active transport. And today in Copenhagen, over 50% of trips are made through cycling. And that is quite an extraordinary achievement. And I stress the point again, it wasn't always that way in Copenhagen. It's something that they have purposefully set out to achieve over a number of decades, and they've done it. Waste innovation, Melbourne, we're sort of proud if we're getting to a sort of 50% diversion from landfill. In Copenhagen, they've got a 97% diversion from landfill. Again, has this been caused the collapse of Danish industry? Has this been the road to serfdom for the Danes or the citizens of Copenhagen? No, they're amongst the richest people in the world. They're living a first world existence, and they're doing it in a highly sustainable way. It can be done. In terms of building typologies, Copenhagen is a more densely populated city than Greater Melbourne. They have embraced the idea of a 5 to 7 storey building typology or storey height, and that has led to many other urban amenity benefits. It's a building typology which we referred to actually earlier this evening, and I, for one, would like to see a lot more of in Melbourne. I could go on and on and on. It's all there in the 30-page report. Do yourselves a favour, Melbourne. Check it out.
A seconder, I am,
And Councillor Oak.
Wholeheartedly endorse your 30-page report. No, thank you. I think I'm really glad that you were able to attend. It's really important that we do participate in the C40 summit, because we get so much from being part of the C40 network, and we haven't actually been able to attend the major events for a long time. And I think so attending is not only just about attending and being there, but it is also sharing our knowledge and taking knowledge and showing the support for aggregation of cities, and especially around climate change. So I'm really glad that you were able to attend, and attend in such an enthusiastic way is really important. And I know that the organisers were very, very glad that the City of Melbourne was able to attend, because we haven't. And as you note in here, the City of Sydney is hosting the C40, the Women for Climate event. My understanding is it's actually expanding. It's not just about women and climate or for climate. It is actually going to be a mini version of the event that you went to in Copenhagen. So I think we certainly should act on your recommendation to get actively involved in the event in early April in Sydney. And support Clover Moore, who has, put her hand, up to host that event. I think was a really great move that she's done. So we should be supporting that event. And also I support at 9.2 requesting management to consider sharing the observations that you've made, because you have put a huge amount of effort into these fact sheets, and they're actually really, really valuable. So certainly hope that more people can use them and read them. I'm not sure how that is to be made possible. Obviously, it's online because it's part of the meeting papers, but how we can actually facilitate them being shared more widely with stakeholders, I think it's a great idea. So, thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Oak, and apologies for my tardiness a moment ago. I was looking at those amazing photos of the grass slopes down the waste-to-energy plant. It's just amazing what they've come up with, so apologies for being a bit distracted. Councillors, are there any other speakers to this motion? Then I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. That's unanimous, so I declare the motion carried. Thanks, councillors. We can say now that this concludes reports for general business for consideration this evening in open session. Councillors, we come to that part of the meeting where we ask if there are any items of proposed urgent business.
There is, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. I'm calling on a councillor to move a motion that the matter meets the criteria for consideration as an item of urgent business. And moved. You are moving that, Deputy Lord Mayor, seconded by Councillor Oak. Thank you. Would either of you like to speak to this motion? No, then I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous. We can declare that motion carried. And so I am looking to you to move that motion. Thank you.
Very self-explanatory. This is just a bit of a governance change in terms of our representation on the Metropolitan Local Government Waste Forum, and our representative has been the chair of the Environment Portfolio, as it is normally, Councillor Cathy Oak, and due to some scheduling clashes, she's unable to represent us for the remainder of this term. So thank you to Councillor Riley and also Councillor Lee Liu for stepping in. Councillor Riley as the Council's representative and Councillor Lee Liu as the substitute, should Councillor Riley not be able to attend. Obviously, we've already spoken about how important waste and resource recovery is to so many areas of Council, so this is an important group for us to be part of.
Councillor Oak.
No, I thank my colleagues for putting their hands up to replace me on this committee that I can't get to anymore. But it's obviously important for the City of Melbourne to participate. So thank you to my colleagues. And it's good to have two, just in case one can't attend. And obviously acknowledge that our officers are at each of these meetings and representing the City of Melbourne incredibly well at those events too.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. Any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Lulu.
Just very simply, I just want to thank Councillor Oak for her years of dedication, and hopefully we can fill those shoes.
Excellent. Any other speakers? Then I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands.
It's unanimous, so I declare that motion carried. Thank you. This brings us to question time at the end of the meeting, 15 minutes for members of the public to be able to ask questions. If you have a question, please raise your hand. We'll get your names and then we'll ask you to come up one by one to the podium. Any questions at this point? Yes? I'm sorry, I don't think you were here earlier when we went through the fact that it's been... Actually, I'll let the CEO talk to it because I wasn't in the room.
Yeah, look, the matter wasn't... There wasn't a quorum to consider the matter. The two officers responsible for the report, it's been referred to panel, but the two officers are in the front row here. Emma Appleton, we can speak to you straight after the meeting if you're available.
Yes, so if you've got your hand up. Oh, I think in relation to that, because we can't respond, it'll be better if it goes to the councillors afterwards and they're making themselves available for the answering of those questions. Is that okay?
Yeah,
got it. Good. Any other questions this evening? No, then I thank you all for being here. Thanks to officers, thanks to councillors, and we declare the meeting closed at 7:05 p.m. First one for the year. Well done, everyone. Thank you.